Word of mouth.
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 Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Maybe you watched or at least heard about that video from a few years ago. Bill Gates was giving a TED Talk when he released a jar full of mosquitoes into the crowd to draw attention to the scourge of malaria.
Now, malaria is, of course, transmitted by mosquitoes. I brought some here so you could experience this. We'll let those roam around the auditorium a little bit. There. There's no reason only poor people should have the experience.
He vowed millions from his foundation to fight malaria then and recommitted $500 million towards infectious diseases last fall. Malaria is responsible for every second human death since the Middle Ages, and almost half of the world's population today is at risk of contracting it. 2 years ago, a relative upstart in the biotech and pharmacological fields announced that it had been conducting successful trials of a malaria vaccine. So why is no one paying attention? Cameron Conaway is a writer, poet, editor, and former social good fellow, and we found his article about the working malaria vaccine that can't seem to get funding at Newsweek. Cameron Conaway, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me here, Virginia.
So some of the things I found interesting about your article was tracing how long malaria has actually been with us. Give us a little bit on the background.
Yeah, this is what actually fascinated me over the years I was researching it. They've actually found Burmese fossils with the mosquito that has the malaria parasite inside it, dating back millions of years. So the fact that we're still dealing with this and that it's still, as you said, causing every second death since the Middle Ages, it bothered me. And it made me feel like, how can I use whatever tools I've had the privilege to develop to do something about it?
How many people are killed each year now?
Right now, I mean, WHO says 600,000, and that's on the lower end of their estimate.
WHO also reports that there are 198 million cases of malaria in 2013, so not everybody dies.
Right, yeah, most people don't. There's five different types of malaria, and at any given point in a year, a single person can contract, you know, malaria 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 times and develop a somewhat of a resistance against it. And also they just didn't get the cerebral malaria, the one that's most dangerous. And also they were older than 5 years old, which is the age, you know, five and younger is the age affected most by cerebral malaria.
So they've developed some resistance. And you write about mosquitoes adapting to preventative measures as well. How?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Every drug we've thrown at it, including artemisinin combination therapies right now, ACTs, the frontline treatment. You know, it's breaking news all over the websites right now about the malaria parasite has developed resistance against this. Mm-hmm. And then the bed nets, they are very helpful, too. But the mosquito is adapting to that. And they're learning at what time people usually get in their bed nets and they're starting to feed earlier in the day. So, yeah, I kept. Every time I found something that seems to be working against malaria, I would see the counter. And just I used to be a professional MMA fighter, so I've always been interested in counters and how to understand them and how to unpack them. And I came across this group scenario, and I'm like, man, they're actually creating a vaccine, and nobody's talking about it, and I don't understand why.
So tell us about this group of researchers. They're working in Rockville, Maryland, have been conducting trials, 100% successful trials. Tell us about Scenaria and its founder, Dr. Stephen Hoffman.
Sure, yeah. Dr. Hoffman is often referred to as a crazy man. He, I guess you could say, left the system because it wasn't working at the speed that he wanted, and because it was thinking inside of the box too much. And he, in my eyes, is sort of a creative entrepreneur. He's always, you know, he'll say things that just pulls you up out of your seat, even you're just sitting there having a dinner with him. And so he left the system in 2003, I believe, and really just from there has been piecing together his own team of people who think in similar ways. And his idea was kind of like, well, you don't have to focus on thinking outside the box if there's no box to begin with. So let's create our own here and see what we can do. And yeah, I mean, it's a 48-member team now. They have a pretty small office in Rockville, Maryland. they all do CrossFit together, and they just can't get the attention that, that they want. And they're doing some really incredible pioneering things, not only for malaria vaccine development, but for science in general.
About half of the world's population is vulnerable or at risk of contracting malaria. Many of those people die, and so far there has not been a successful means of immunizing them against it. My guest Cameron Conaway wrote about one such firm, a little upstart, pipsqueak of a firm, as he calls it, that is developing an anti-malarial vaccine and so far can't get funding. So this vaccine that they did develop, the PFSPZ vaccine, why does it work in terms that we can understand?
Sure. So, yeah, PF is Plasmodium falciparum. This is the malaria parasite. And SPZ is sporozoites. So sporozoites are basically one way to understand it is the animal that's inside the mosquito's stomach, if you will. And these sporozoites go through a bunch of processes. I could get into the science behind it, but they eventually work their way up through the midgut and get into the salivary gland. So when the mosquito pulls blood from somebody, those sporozoites go into the human body. And there the process begins where they replicate and they change their forms. What's interesting about this vaccine is that they're using cryopreserved, weakened, pure sporozoites. So they're injecting the entire sporozoite into the human body, whereas some other vaccines are trying to use parts of it and having to do multiple injections in order to get the full effect. Cinerea is actually, I mean, I saw their big cryopreservation tanks. It's pretty unbelievable. And they've actually then pioneered research and development technology so that they can fit these into vials where the vial stays at the freezing temperature that it needs to until it can be delivered. And then they've also tested from needle handoff to injection, how long it takes somebody that has had 5 minutes of training, and it was like 67 seconds to to distribute the vaccine. So yeah, from actually in their office to seeing how they're actually testing, putting the vaccine in people's bodies, it's just blown my mind. And I've been to a bunch of different conferences now where I'm waiting for people just to say one thing about this, and they're not.
Well,
and,
yeah, it sounds like, you know, they've thought through delivery, preservation, how the vaccine is going to be administered, so really thought things through. And when they announced in August of 2013 that they had this vaccine, NPR and BBC ran stories. But let's get to this, you know, the different levels of why this is not being covered. We've got the media crowd, the science crowd, the big pharma, and the public. So let's talk about these other scientists. You went to this big annual meeting of tropical medicine scientists and doctors, didn't even mention it. Now, what do you think is at the root here?
Part of it is, I think, just finances. They just don't have the money. So when they do have breaking news, and I think in a lot of ways they were lucky that their big news got picked up by some different outlets because they've had some other stuff happen that they couldn't get placed anywhere. But yeah, I talked to them about this and I asked them, why do you think you're not getting the attention? And there's just a kind of scramble that's happening at the office where, you know, some of the brilliant researchers that you think should be behind the glass room doing incredible work, they're like jumping on the Twitter account and putting out some tweets. And so I think in that sense, they just don't have the finances to have the kind of, I guess, holistic, flexible publishing marketing machine that I think they deserve to have. And so that was part of the spark for why I tried to write this piece.
Well, one of the things you cite is that The Guardian never mentioned Cinerea or this vaccine, at the same time publishing 20 articles since 2004 that either mentioned or were explicit about GlaxoSmithKline's far less effective malaria vaccine. GlaxoSmithKline, of course, you know, 99,000 employees, $38.8 billion in revenues. I mean, is this just a big pharma versus the little guy kind of story? Or what are some of the other factors going on here?
Sure. I mean, I think it is the kind of, you know, underdog story. But I also think the story is part of the story. So Cinerea simply cannot get their story out there. And so the story that's been pushed by their competitors is, well, and this frankly makes sense, they're using cryopreservation, but they're trying to get their vaccine to areas that are very humid. How is that going to work? And I think the story is ended there because most people just nod their heads and say, well, yeah, that's absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm. So a funder is not going to say, I'm going to get behind this.
Right. So then, yeah, the whole story loses the nuances. And that's what I was interested in discovering.
How about us, you know, the public? Have we gone a little malarial deaf here in the U.S. because it doesn't really affect us?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's why I wrote the book called Malaria Poems. I was frustrated at myself that I had such little awareness about malaria's impact on the world. And when I was living in Bangkok doing some human rights journalism and traveling and was there for probably 2.5 years. And this is where I met some researchers who were like, you know, we would love to show you the impact of this. And we think it's going to stir your heart. And it did. And part of why I write, it comes from a place of anger. When I'm frustrated, I feel the need to make that swirl of thoughts kind of slow down and bring some sense to it. And yeah, I saw that I was one of those Americans that were, as you said, deaf to malaria.
Well, obviously, the author of a book called Malarial Poems, there's something in it for you. But it's a well-researched article. You do a really good job of explaining the scientific terms. But we can sense that you were just incredulous on some level, you
good,
know?
Good.
So what, Cameron, coming away from this, is revealed to you about the way things get funded, about the way the system does or doesn't work?
It's interesting because this particular story taught me so much about the importance and the system of publishing and social media, even though I've been in those fields for years. So I guess my goal is to just keep pushing this message. I'll be speaking in a couple different places, just putting their name on the radar somehow and just getting them a second look, because I think in a lot of ways, money can get people a second look, but a story can do the same thing. So I will be telling more stories.
Anything happened since your story was published in Newsweek?
A lot of haters came out. I got a bunch of different emails that said essentially they rehashed the crazy story of cryopreservation. I totally get it. But every vaccine has their difficulties. You know, would you rather take one that might be tough to get into tropical areas, but they're proving to be able to do it, or one that only has a 50% success rate and also has those same travel logistic problems? So that's been informative just because I think it's helped me see the article from a new perspective. So I read the haters, but I don't take it in too much.
Cameron Conaway, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Virginia. It was an honor to be here.
Cameron Conaway wrote for Newsweek Science and Tech section about a working malaria vaccine that can't get money. It does have some problems, but it also has a lot of promise. And you can read some of his malaria poems on our website, wordofmouthradio.org.